The staff and volunteers at CGSF wish you a jolly,
merry,
happy,
joyful,
fantastic,
exciting,
fancy,
magnificent,
remarkable,
special,
white,
sparkling,
terrific,
stunning,
festive,
and
wonderful
holiday
season.
You know, my reporting has shown that Canada has zero national security posture, and it's why China and India treat us with disregard. I've heard directly from Indian officials and intelligence people that they see Canada, especially under Justin Trudeau, as beneath contempt.
Beneath contempt. Not the world's conscience. Not America, but without all the bad stuff. Not blue helmets, not peacekeepers, not problem solvers. Just a joke. Less than a joke, I guess, if we're not even worthy of contempt. That's how reporter Sam Cooper put it in describing just how far our nation has fallen on the global stage, at least in the eyes of his sources, members of India's government and intelligence community. Of course they would say that, right? Our Prime Minister did just recently accuse their government of murder, of assassinating a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil. Those were strong words from Trudeau, shockingly strong, actually. But the thing is, he didn't back them up with any evidence, and he did not have the clout to inspire other nations, namely the United States, to rally behind us. I mean, that was over 2 months ago, and now that the dust has settled, it really does look like, as bold as our Prime Minister was in that speech, nothing that he said has resulted in meaningful action or consequences for India. It's looking like the guy was all bark and no bite. And it's been over a year since China's president brazenly humiliated Trudeau at the G20 in an incident which was caught on camera and broadcast to the world. Being a joke to bigger nations has consequences for Canadians. If the world's bullies know that they can set up police stations right here in Canada to spy on and harass Canadian citizens on behalf of their foreign governments, if they can arrest our citizens when we travel abroad in order to use us as human bargaining chips for hostage diplomacy, if they can launder their money here, if they can punish Canadians by denying us visas, if they can send assassins here to kill Canadian citizens, all without consequence, if they can interfere with our elections, then yeah, being a joke matters for all of us. The world is noticing our decline in stature. A recent feature in the Financial Times described in excruciating detail how geopolitics has caught up with Canada. How we can no longer rely on cover from America from the harsh realities of a changing world. And our government seems to agree. Foreign Minister Melanie Joly recently said, "The tectonic plates of the world order are shifting. Our location on the globe, surrounded by three oceans, can no longer be relied upon to protect us." Well, one reporter has been standing at the fulcrum of these developments. You heard him a minute ago. Sam Cooper famously, or infamously, broke the news of Chinese interference in Canadian elections when he was reporting for Global News, sharing revelations that were leaked to him by confidential sources within our intelligence service, CSIS, all about how Canada has been allegedly messed with for decades by foreign nations. Sam has since left Global and set up shop independently under the name The Bureau, where he focuses on foreign interference and just foreign interference as it continues to hold space as the biggest evolving Canadian news story. And the stories just keep coming. In recent weeks, we have learned new allegations about the two Michaels that challenge the official government narrative about these two Canadians detained in 2018 and held for over 1,000 days in apparent response and retribution to the Meng Wanzhou case. And we have learned shocking revelations about another assassination attempt, once again allegedly by India's government on North American soil. That shocker had the opposite effect, lending credibility to our government's claims. It is all a complicated, murky, and disturbing soup. And I can't promise you that you're going to leave this episode with everything cleared up. But the conversation I'm about to have with Sam Cooper, it's going to take you deep into the mess and show you things that I promise you, you do not know about yet. Wait for it. There's a lot of wild stuff happening on your beat, and I think maybe we should just go through these recent news developments and then try to figure out what they mean and what they might have to do with each other. Does that sound good to you?
That's good. Yep.
All right. I think people will remember this shocking announcement from the Prime Minister that India maybe killed a guy in Canada.
Today I'm rising to inform the House of an extremely serious matter. Over the past number of weeks, Canadian security agencies have been actively pursuing credible allegations of a potential link between agents of the government of India and the killing of a Canadian citizen, Hardeep Singh Nijjar.
And we all said, okay, that's wild. What more can you tell us about that? And I think that was about it. There have been some progressions on that story in recent days. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, what we've learned in the last few days is that the U.S. government says that they stopped, allegedly, an India extraterritorial covert effort to target a Sikh activist in a deadly way in the United States. And so this is very relevant to the allegations in Canada. We have many people from the Sikh community that in their own way are advocating for what they think should happen in the state of India. And we learned from our prime minister that allegedly India had targeted one of these people in Vancouver. And so the United States has said they stopped an effort involving India to target a similar Sikh activist on U.S. soil.
I mean, it's all there in the indictment. There's this Indian government official who allegedly recruited a guy, hired this guy named Gupta to in turn hire a hitman for $15,000 to carry out a murder. And it turns out that the hitman who the guy went to was an undercover DEA agent. Okay. And the Washington Post reports that the guy they were trying to kill was Gurpatwant Singh Panin, who is a Khalistani figure, a general counsel for the New York-based Sikh activist group. And the connection to Canada, I read, is direct. Apparently, in the back and forth between these characters, this guy Gupta, who was trying to get this guy killed, was sent a picture of Nijjar, the guy who was killed here. And then he sent his hitman, a supposed hitman, actually an undercover DEA agent, a message saying, oh, we have so many targets, here's one of them. And so there's mounting evidence, The Intercept tells us, that India is running a transnational targeted killing program against dissidents. And that's allegedly what happened here in Canada. We don't know the details. And in the States, there's actually legal recourse, and we know a lot about it. Is that the story as you understand it?
That's the story as I understand it. Our prime minister stood and said Canada had credible intelligence that Nijjar was targeted, and yet there was the insinuation or inference that this came from an ally, this intelligence. And so now when we put that together, of course the ally would be someone in the CIA or the National Security Agency in the States, which has almost the eye of Sauron, like visibility on communications around the world. Furthermore, yes, the DEA, the FBI have all kinds of undercover counterintelligence operatives, agents within organized crime networks around the world that can gather the type of intelligence put in that indictment. So although I haven't seen the evidence, I agree it's totally consistent that the U.S. discovered what was going on and it had a direct connection to Canada.
I mean, to compare the two situations and to, you know, put this in context of what you've been reporting, back in September, before we knew about this American plot, you reported that CSIS here in Canada in 2017 attempted a major intervention to shut down a rapidly growing Indian intelligence network in Vancouver. They knew this was happening, that the Indian government had some kind of intelligence network that was monitoring and targeting people in the Sikh community in Canada.
Yes, I obtained over the past while something from our National Security Intelligence Panel of Parliamentarians. It's a bipartisan panel that reviews deep collections of intelligence that are made for and submitted to our prime minister. And so they did a big study on how foreign interference, specifically from most prominently China, Russia, and India, is deeply harming Canada's communities, and that our government hasn't acted with reforms. So the takeaway I had, I, like many, was shocked when our prime minister stood and said India could have been involved in that assassination of Nijjar in Vancouver, because one of the most important case studies in this NISCOP document says that, as you say, CSIS was shut down. They were blocked because Global Affairs Canada had big plans for the prime minister to travel to India in 2018, and they thought that confronting Indian diplomats on their interference in Vancouver, also Ontario, Ottawa, would sideline or off-track the prime minister's political objectives for that visit to India. And furthermore, the government overall values trade with China and India over confronting those nations over their interference in our societies. So that was a scoop, because it was explaining, hey, Prime Minister, you're standing up and saying there's a problem here, but your government knew about it and did nothing about it, essentially. When I say knew about it, did they know that assassination or targeting is happening? No, they knew that deep covert activity targeting Sikh activists in Canada was occurring.
Where does this leave our relationship with India? And if India was playing these games in both countries, in Canada, it feels like the relationship is just torched. I guess they're processing visas again for the many, many Canadians of Indian descent who need to go back and forth. But we're not in good shape with them. Our prime minister stood up and called them out in this very public way. In the U.S., they're still very much working together, even though they were able to thwart an assassination attempt like this.
Yeah, there's two things that pop up. I mean, first of all, the way the prime minister stood up, let's review the facts here. In the United States, they already have a sealed indictment ready to come out with the facts. They've done their investigation. Beyond that, they have the capacity to investigate and prosecute these crimes in the United States and protect their citizens. The prime minister, apparently for, you know, bald-faced political reasons, gets up, maybe he was having a bad week, he probably was, and makes it look like Canada is taking this very seriously, or he's going to do something. Based on what I know about our lack of capacity on foreign interference, it's open games in Canada for hostile states. I would be a little bit, you know, surprised if Canada could ever, you know, get to the stage where they could charge someone in Canada for that crime. That's what I take away from what you asked. And beyond that, I mean, look, China and India do not take Canada seriously. There are good reasons. Look, we're a relatively small nation in terms of economy, and we have very little, you know, recourse with these nations when they want to push someone around.
I think you brought up a third point of comparison, which is, even though this got as much profile as it could possibly get in Canada, with the Prime Minister himself calling it out, we have no details about it, and there have been no arrests. In the States, Biden is able to maintain a cordial relationship with India as a country, but their justice system is in action and able to do something about it. I mean, it really does seem like an illustration of a certain impotence when the Prime Minister is saying that they came here and murdered somebody, but we haven't arrested anybody about it. I mean, obviously it is possible to infiltrate these networks, as America has proven here.
There's two things. For one, India must take the United States seriously as sort of the leading power in the world. Everyone knows that when they say something, they can back it up, to make this simple. on the other hand, when Canada says something, especially under this current government, when they say something geopolitically, people start to laugh. We're talking about Niger here. I mean, what I can add that I don't think probably few people in journalism have is the visibility on the networks involved. So from early on, there was some skepticism over whether, you know, it really could be India, or how could the prime minister possibly know? And the reason for that is Mr. Niger himself, he was a Khalistan separatist. But I can confirm that, you know, from my police and intelligence sources in Vancouver, he was deeply involved in organized crime. He was deeply involved in underground activity, weapons activity. And so it could be difficult, you can imagine, to prove, unless you have very high capacity in law enforcement, was this, you know, an organized crime sort of fight? It's not an Indian hitman that was flown in with a government, you know, pass and did this. It's someone that would be in a network that involves organized crime, and quite possibly, as the U.S. Case indicates, there are ties to intelligence at some level.
All right, let's talk about the other major revelation that came out on your beat in recent weeks. And this one came, I think, courtesy. It seems like the two main sources of steady scoops when it comes to foreign interference from China are you, your work at the Bureau, and what Bob Fife and Steve Chase are doing at the Globe and Mail. And it was through their work that we learned that the story of the two Michaels is not as squeaky clean and simple as Canadians were led to believe. Can you recap that one for us?
Yeah, what they reported, the Michaels, they're not just over in China, just average citizens. What the Globe reported was that Michael Kovrig was involved in sort of a little known outside of the intelligence community, almost off the books, Global Affairs Canada sort of effort to collect information from people in China and then report it back to Canada in order to share with the Five Eyes. You know, Mr. Spavor, the other Michael, is claiming he got ensnared in this sort of Global Affairs Canada low-level intelligence collection, and this is why he was tossed in jail, and he's pointing the finger at Kovrig as sort of a Canadian spy. But I'm seeing a very sad story of two Canadians. We don't know exactly what they were involved in. Maybe an ill-advised global affairs information program. And now we have someone that's doing what I would call damage to Canada's international reputation and posture by suing the government of Canada and saying that, you know, we've set up the framework where that got him tossed in jail. And I'm afraid that this is a boon for the Chinese Communist Party. They're all over this story, and it's become victim blaming, as if, you know, Canada is the wrong party here and not China for tossing our Michaels in jail.
They're saying that this validates what they were saying from the start, which is that these guys are spies. My understanding of there's a bit of semantic stuff happening here. The position of our government is, well, Kovrig wasn't a spy. Yeah, he was doing intelligence gathering for the Five Eyes intelligence community internationally on behalf of Canada about what was going on in China. But don't call him a spy, because it was overt, not covert. He was assembling information that is sort of readily accessible. There was no subterfuge. He wasn't hiring agents. He wasn't using deception. Spavor is arguing something, allegedly, because this is all through Fife sources. It looks pretty good. No one's denying the stuff. It looks like this is actually accurate stuff. And my understanding of the story is that Spavor is saying, I wasn't just randomly thrown in jail because China was just rounding up Michaels from Canada. I was duped. Kovrig was like a buddy. We'd have a drink. And I didn't know that the guy was actually collecting intelligence on me, which actually sounds a little bit covert to me, however low level it was. Spavor was like, you know, not working for government. He was working in tourism and had some strange access to North Korea and was obviously a person of interest. So Kovrig, allegedly, according to the Globe and Mail report, is like forming this relationship with him to get him to just talk and talk and talk. And then Kovrig hands that information over to the Five Eyes. China learns about this. And that's what gets Spavor on their list. So both things can be true, that China was playing hostage diplomacy. They were looking for a couple of Canadians to lock up, perhaps, so that they had some bargaining chips to get Meng back. But they didn't just randomly choose two dudes. And Spavor I don't know, Sam. Maybe he is going to be dragging Canada's reputation through the mud, but he spent over 1,000 days in prison under horrible circumstances. He might have a legitimate beef if he was duped into being a source of information for Canadian intelligence gathering.
What I can say, and I can confirm with absolute certainty for your listeners, Jesse, is it is 100% plausible. I would say it's proven that China believed these two were either working for Canada or the United States or Britain. In China's mind, these two guys were spies. But what I want to assert is I think the evidence shows Kovrig, certainly, he's involved in a program where he meets interlocutors, as they call them, and he tries to get some interesting, you know, context back to Canada. But I'm going to stress again, this is low-level stuff, very low-level.
The other thing that's interesting looking back on the case of the two Michaels is that when China wanted to have something in their pocket to use as a wedge to get Meng out of Canadian custody, it was really America that they had a problem with. It was America that was trying to extradite Meng and was pursuing criminal charges against her. But China didn't imprison Americans. They came after Canadians. What do we make of that?
That's right. I mean, the first and very simple point is, again, the United States, you have to respect that nation. One, their economy. Well, maybe one, their military, but their capacity, what do they have? Something like 18, 19 national security or intelligence agencies. They have, as we've said, rule of law. They've got institutions that work. China's economy is like crashing right now because American investors are starting to pull their money out. They could not hit back at the country that was bringing Mun or seeking to bring Mun to trial.
You f*** with the people you can afford to f*** with, and they couldn't afford to f*** with America, yeah. Right? If, even though it was America that led to Meng being in Canadian custody, if they had actually just locked up a couple of Americans on pretty flimsy espionage charges, they would be sacrificing a relationship. And they would be, you know, at the time it was Trump, they're daring him to do something. But if you do it to Canadians, you've got your bargaining chip. And America could either take that really seriously or they could say, well, it didn't happen to us, which is what Trump did. And then ultimately Biden was the one who was able to arrange for this essentially just a swap. And the same thing that John McCallum had to resign over, which was suggesting that maybe we could just swap these people. That would, no, we couldn't possibly. We have rule of law here. Ultimately, that is what happened. And the story of that is one of disrespect that we are a pawn and we can be leveraged in this way. All right. Finally, in terms of recent news revelations, tell me if this is connected and tell me what actually happened here. So much is going on completely off of, the, of these issues in the news right now that I think Canadians can be forgiven for taking their eye off the ball. But we also recently received news that former Mountie Cameron Ortiz was convicted of espionage. He was about to leak information to Beijing. Can you give us the summary version of that case?
There's two stories, really. He was convicted on some charges of leaking RCMP and our allies' plans to target global money laundering and terror financing networks that are really essentially, as we heard in the trial, these are the networks that are laundering drug money around the world and essentially funding, you know, bombs for Hamas and Hezbollah. But Ortiz, the traitor, the convicted traitor, for some reason, apparently personal financial benefit, was leaking plans to target the network. These are high-level Iranian criminal operatives that are terror financing, laundering money, and he gave away plans. So what we heard was he got put away on 6 charges essentially because he damaged the RCMP irreparably. He alerted these global terrorists and money launderers that they're being targeted. He helped their networks in that way. And that's why he's gone. So he faces sentencing in a few weeks. But the very key thing here is there is what I believe is a bigger intelligence compromise of documents that it looks like relate to China and possibly an ongoing national security investigation that Ortiz was planning, according to the Crown, to leak likely to a few Chinese diplomats in Ottawa in September 2019 when he was arrested. This causes massive alarm in the Five Eyes, what the RCMP found in their search. But these charges of more intelligence-related, less organized crime and terror financing related. This evidence never made it to court because a judge decided if this information came out in court, it would be against Canada's national interest.
They dropped the charges against him just to avoid having this stuff come out in court?
Yes. A judge said in October 2022, for this other set of information, for Mr. Ortiz to defend himself, this information must be revealed at least to a certain extent in court. And the judge said, I think that Canada's national interests are more important than Ortiz facing this very serious charge. Therefore, that information will never see the light of day.
Oh, wow. Let me recap that because that is extraordinary. So we have you call him a traitor. He's a convicted crooked Mountie. Apparently for financial gain, this guy was handing over information that he had because he's a cop, because he's a federal cop in Canada. And now he's convicted, but only of specific charges. But he was also originally charged with leaking information to Beijing, with compromising Canadian national security to Beijing. And they dropped those charges because in order to pursue them, give him a chance to defend himself, the public would find out what's going on. That's our understanding of this one?
That's our understanding. And as I talk to you, Jesse, I'm editing a story that says the RCMP feared that a foreign entity could exfiltrate or take Cameron Ortiz out of Canada's legal jurisdiction. And others have found evidence that I'm reporting on as well. They reported it first, credit where credit is due, that China's embassy is the fear here.
What do all of these stories tell us when put together?
What it's saying is that Canada is a G7 nation, a nation that has the potential really possibly to be something like a superpower, a real player of good on the global stage, but due to ill-advised decisions and corruption, we have become a playground for the worst criminal and terror espionage networks in the world that are using Canada as a basing point for operations. And I just reported recently that a U.S.-based NGO that's full of intelligence experts from the United States and works with Canadian experts says that our laws and institutions are being overrun by foreign crime and intelligence espionage bad actors because we don't have the capacity. And what this means is Canada has become a global fentanyl production, shipping and exporting state like China. We had this Iranian currencies trader that was cited in $3.5 billion in FinTrack anti-money laundering reports in about 15 years. This is one currency shop, a guy that's using Canada to run money for allegedly Hezbollah and doing, you know, proliferation of weapons technology for Iran using Canada. So that's the story here. Canada is now becoming a questionable actor to our allies because of this activity. And the Ortiz case, I would say, is the most fulsome evidence of the big problems we have that are starting to, you know, come to the surface irrefutably.
I'm not just hearing this from you. The Financial Times just had this long piece, How Geopolitics Caught Up with Canada, and it tells a similar story about what we were, which was just sort of this really insulated, lucky nation that was just surrounded by water on three sides, and then America to the south. We were fireproof. And in terms of our international presence, we could rely on this allyship with America. We could either back them up, or we fancied ourselves at certain times their moral conscience.
Yes.
It was low risk, low stakes for us to say, well, not so sure about Vietnam, not so sure about Iraq. We had this sense of ourselves as the blue helmets who were doing good around the world. And this Financial Times story basically describes how that has completely collapsed, and that whatever geographic security or insulation we had has been destroyed, maybe by the internet. And I don't know, it gets a little bit squinchy because a lot of it has to do with diaspora communities and the influence that foreign governments have over what happens in Canada because of these diaspora communities. They're intimidating Canadians who belong to these communities, assassinating Canadians who belong to these communities. And the story that emerges from your reporting and in the Times is not necessarily one of Canadian government corruption, but just like completely asleep at the wheel, I guess is the general sense that we're just a playground and it's known and you can get away with whatever you want here, and they're having a field day and they don't respect us at all, and our sovereignty is not respected.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. The points I'd add is squinchy. I agree. You know, I've been at the front end of showing how diaspora communities are the very first to be targeted and victimized. Although there's some very brave people fighting back, Canada hasn't had their back. We see that in the story we talk about Trudeau stopping a CSIS intervention in Vancouver, of the targeting of the Sikh community. We see that since 2015, Trudeau government has been warned of these Chinese police stations. So the squinchiness is